This is Fresh Air. As a teenager, Susan Schaller was drawn to the visual way deaf people communicate. Though she could hear, she became a teacher of American Sign Language. While working as an interpreter for deaf people in a reading skills class in California, Schaller met a 27-year-old illegal immigrant from Mexico. Not only was he deaf, he was illiterate. He had no concept of language at all. Schaller had to find a way to teach language to a man who had none. Schaller has written about this man, who she calls Ildefonso. Fresh Air producer Amy Sallet spoke with Schaller about her new book, A Man Without Words.
He had never spoken, or I should say communicated, with another human being in the way that we commonly, and most of us, almost all of us, do, which is using standard symbols, names that always mean the same, day after day, which means that he had no way of understanding the world, anything that takes language to explain, such as politics, the things that we can't see, bureaucracy, absentee ownership, political entities such as the United States and Mexico were foreign to him. So he had no idea why he was arrested, if he was ever arrested as an illegal resident. He couldn't understand what was going on, the idea of a border, for example, a political border.
What were some of the ways that you could figure out that he had compensated in his life for things that he just didn't know about, because he had gotten by for 27 years?
After working with him for a while and partly seeing how he copied me, and which was one of the major barriers, I couldn't communicate because every time I brought up my hands to visually communicate with him, he would bring up his hands and try to copy me, which was the first and most obvious clue as to how he survived. He had survived by copying. He watched people work. If people pointed to a bucket and to a place to carry it to, I mean, he would figure out that he was being told to do something. So he could respond to visual orders, basically mime or acting something out, pointing. And even if he didn't understand what he was doing, oftentimes he survived by following people.
So he appeared in this class where you were teaching, and you wanted to teach him sign language and reading, but it didn't work for you to just show him a picture of a cat and then sign the word for cat or show him the written word for cat. Why didn't that work?
Well, as I said before, he echoed, a visual echo. He copied everything, so I couldn't get across the idea of listening, you know, to pay attention. He hadn't ever in his life been in the kind of dialogue that I was trying to perform, and the way I finally got through was to ignore him. And I realized that what struck me when I first saw him was that although he was scared, although he was withdrawn and confused, he studied everything. He just looked at everybody and what was going on, trying to figure out what was happening. And I should just interject, one of the most amazing things about him, I think, is that after 27 years, he kept trying to understand what was going on and had not given up. So I just thought, well, you know, he will study me. I just had faith, and I just ignored him, and I became the teacher and an imaginary student. And I just tried to teach this imaginary student the lesson about how the sign cat and the word C-A-T, and I should say he didn't know what a C or an A or a T was, but I think I was hoping he had a general association between this picture of a cat and this general shape, C-A-T. So I was using that along with the sign for cat and miming the creature cat and petting a cat. And I went over and over about how this was a means of transferring the idea of cat from my head to his head. And then I would become him, the imaginary student, and I would go up to the board and I'd start petting cat. Like, oh, I get it, that's a cat. And then, of course, it would smear and I would be confused. Oh, that's not a cat. And then I would go back to the teacher and mime, no, that's not the cat, but the idea of a cat. And I would try to get it from my head to his head.
You continued working with him, and then one day he finally did get the connection between the written word cat and the picture of a cat. Can you describe that moment?
It was extremely exciting and happy, and it was also rather sad, because what happened was he just had the insight, everything has a name. So in that moment, it would be inaccurate to say that he understood language, because language is more than names, but the idea that everything had a name, that he could use it with other people besides me, and that that name would exist tomorrow, it was just overwhelming. And he started pointing to everything in the room And in the book, I describe it as if he had seen everything again for the first time. And it did seem like that. He was just scanning the room and pointing, what's this, what's this, what's this? And it was very exciting, and I gave him all the signs I could. And then he collapsed and started crying. And it's open to interpretation exactly what were his feelings. But my feeling at the time, my guess, was that he was overwhelmed also with the loss that he had missed out in 27 years. He had been, in a sense, a prisoner, left on the outside, that he could not join humanity because he didn't have the names that other people had.
So he began to realize how different he was or what he was missing out on?
Yes, and I think although he knew he was missing things, I should say he didn't understand what deafness and hearing was. Being born deaf, deaf people don't, how would they understand what hearing is? And he, not having any education or exposure to other deaf people, knew that something was different. But unfortunately, I think he thought he was stupid for much of his life, that all of us, in a sense, were deaf, but we somehow figured out what we were doing on each other's lips. I mean, he didn't know what hearing and sound was. And he put a great burden on himself, you know, how are people communicating and why can't I figure it out? And so it was very sad, because instead of really being angry at the time that he saw that he had been kept away from these names, or names kept away from him, I think he was still filled with this idea that I was dumb, I couldn't figure out what was going on. And he's much less that way now, but for a long time, I think he was filled with anger, in a sense, at himself instead of others.
What were some of the things that he all along had understood about life that surprised you?
Oh, one of the things was just his relationship to the world and the way he thought about relating to the world. Early on, he explained to me in mime, it was a question, and again, there's a lot of guesswork with mime, but the best guess I could come up with was he's asking me, why are people so greedy? And then years later, when he had language, he did talk about how he would like to have his own little garden, his own little plot, and he thought that the reason there were wars and the reason that there was so much trouble in the world is that people weren't happy with just a little garden, that they wanted great big huge houses and gardens, and therefore there wasn't enough to go around. And I thought this was pretty amazing. I mean, he had come up with this before language, and that's one example of how he was a little bit of a philosopher, even without language, and again, without feedback from other people.
Did you think about how he might have developed those ideas?
One thing, again, that distinguishes him from wild children and abused children is he had a loving family, a very close family, and although there wasn't communication in the sense of language, he had affection and physical communication. I'm sure he got enough hugs from a good Mexican family and he felt he belonged, and I think that made a big difference on how he was able to think about relating to the world and relating to friends and loved ones. And Ildefonso and his experiences really beg another question: how much do we learn without language? He learned an awful lot about, I think, relating to the world and perhaps even Mexican culture as opposed to Anglo culture, just by seeing and just by watching. And it is an interesting question: how much do we learn before we talk, or even after we talk and hear, how much do we learn just by seeing?
My guest is Susan Schaller. Her book is called A Man Without Words. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Susan Schaller is my guest. In your book, you describe a scene when you're at the school teaching and an old friend of yours happens to stop by, and he's deaf, and he met Ildefonso, and they just began communicating very quickly and easily. And after watching them, you felt that your hearing handicapped you. Why would you feel that way? What was going on in their communication?
An amazing thing that I saw when I first met deaf people, I felt as though I could see for the first time, that my eyes were in a sense opened, or that the window was much bigger. And again, when this deaf friend walked in and met Ildefonso and started talking to him, signing to him, I said, "Oh, Cal, he doesn't know language. He's just learning his very first language." And he just, in a sense, almost ignored me or brushed me off and said, oh, well, he didn't say anything, but it was just the attitude that, well, that's not that significant, and started communicating to him with mime and gestures. And Ildefonso, after a few moments, responded. And these two brains were very different than my brain in the sense that they weren't dependent at all on sound to carry meaning, and they could easily use their body and face and arms and hands to describe anything. And as I mentioned in the book, that there wasn't any one symbol or gesture that Kel, my friend, came up with that I couldn't have thought of, but it was the speed. He did it so quickly and just automatically. And I felt handicapped because my hearing brain was dependent on words and sound. And even though I learned American Sign Language, I was a foreigner to this world, and I had to translate. I had to think very consciously, how do you communicate visually? And hearing people learning sign language, especially later in life, they really do have to cross a huge gulf. How do you use your eyes and this world of vision to communicate?
You also write that as you worked with deaf people, you began to realize that deafness is far more than an inability to hear, and that there's a unique culture of deaf people, which you were just talking about. So, can you tell us more about that?
One of the big differences between deafness and any other disability or loss of faculty is that it does immediately affect language. And even if we lose our hearing later in life, we suddenly have communication problems with the people around us. Deafness is immediately a language barrier. So deaf people, signing deaf people, see themselves as a linguistic minority. They don't see themselves as handicapped or disabled. Obviously, if everyone is deaf and signing, or you don't have to be deaf, but signing, then they would have no handicap. And I think in general, and many linguists say this about world relations, if we were multilingual, we'd have a lot less problems in life. And if American Sign Language or a signed language was accepted as a legitimate language to learn, bilingualism or multilingualism would solve deaf people's problems, basically.
Eventually, Ildefonso got a job, and he left the school where you were teaching, and you ultimately left town. And then 9 years went by before you saw him again. When you did get back together, what had happened with him during that time?
He became a legal resident. He had several part-time jobs, but he was given a job that gave him some creativity and independence, which I think he liked very much. He became a gardener for a wealthy institution, and it wasn't just maintaining gardens, but actually creating them. And it wasn't just that he had a good-paying job or a job where he could be proud of his work, but that he knew what it meant, that he was now a part of the world. He knew what it meant to be a legal resident. He knew what it meant to be on one side of the border versus the other. He was now a part of the world, a part of the human community. And he was very, very proud of his job. And I got the feeling that it wasn't just, as I said, being a part of this job, but now he's a part of the human family.
Did he ever say anything to you about what this whole acquisition of language meant to him?
He does say that his whole world has changed, and he for one thing, knows that there are answers to his questions and that he can ask questions. And he mentioned to me that when he gets a chance to have someone interpret the news, he has them interpret the television news for him. And he has also said that it's very difficult for him to think back to what it was like. He has changed. Language has changed him. And he can no longer think the same way as he did before.
Susan Schaller, thanks so much for coming by today and talking with us.
Thank you.
Susan Schaller's new book is A Man Without Words. She spoke with Fresh Air producer Amy Sallet. This is Fresh Air.